She is immortal. A thousand years old. And she cannot die. A creature of legend. Like the Raven. A thief who stole the sun and the moon. They sent a warrior to bring her back. He found her. Together, they brought back light to the world. I was a cop. To me, she was just a thief. Another day on the job. But she wasn't. She changed my life. Changed everything. And both of us knew from that moment on, nothing would ever be the same.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander, The Raven, Episode 8, The Unknown Soldier. And here to talk with you about it, as we are all the time, I'm Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis, and that is the Audie Norman. Audie, how you doing?
Doing all right. Like I was saying pre-show, just fighting a head cold that just doesn't want to let go. So it's just super annoying at this point.
Oh, yeah. Those are the... That's the worst, when it just lingers and it just hangs there. Mm-hmm. It's like,
I've been... Especially when it's like just a little bit during the day, but at night it just gets all in your sinuses and you're
Yeah, I had trivia night tonight. I went out and we ended up in second place. So
nice.
That was kind of nice. Yeah, it was a good trivia, and I had a great falafel sandwich for dinner. So,
ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I saw they had a falafel sandwich and a Cuban sandwich on the menu. I'm like, oh, this isn't fair. This is a Sophie's choice of menu items. What do I go with? And I went with the falafel, and I'm glad I did. So
nice.
Yeah, so episode 8, The Unknown Soldier. Coming off what was a pretty decent episode last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that big of a step back. And
no, not really.
We'll get into why. But I will say this up front. There was a thing that happens right at the end that, for me, brought this episode up. So we'll kind of get to that. Because it was something that I don't think is discussed enough in the Highlander mythos. And I thought it was kind of interesting. I want to get your take on it as well. But
sure.
Before we get to that part and what we thought of the episode, we should talk about what happens in the episode.
Yeah?
What do I pack? The Louis Vuitton or the Tumi? Is it Paris or are we roughing it?
Is that your answer to absolutely everything? When the going gets tough, the tough get passports?
Yes.
Okay, so we open up on a back alley, and there's a guy looking really ragged, really rough, lighting up half a cigarette, and he hears a voice or something, and he looks back, and there's somebody in the shadows in what looks like a soldier's uniform. And so he freaking out, man, and he tries to run away. I do like the set for that that alley. It's just really cool looking. Very kind of stereotypical city alley. But he gets to his car and he's having trouble even starting it. And he's all, I mean, he just looks like he is either drunk or high, strung out, something. Like, guy's in rough shape. Puts his car into reverse for whatever reason, trying to get away from this person, and runs over the guy in the soldier's uniform.
Yeah.
And gets out of the car, sees him, and then gets back in the car. By the way, the guy in the soldier's uniform called out his name. Mm-hmm. Captain, what was his name? Captain Magnus. So then he gets in his car and drives away and goes home. He parks in a different alley and then walks up the longest fire escape I have ever seen.
Pretty much.
Gets to a door with no handle, but it's open. That was when I had to suspend a little disbelief. I'm like, there's no way that door would open. Like, even in a run-down building, the fire door would still work. But he gets inside. He goes into his apartment, and who's there? Dude, he just ran over.
Yeah.
Tire marks on the uniform and everything, which I thought was a nice touch. And they have a little confrontation, and then there's a fight before they both go over the railing and fall several stories to the ground. And then somebody sees it, I think, or something. I don't know. But whatever it is, the guy in the soldier's uniform, who we don't know who that is yet, gets up and runs away.
Mm-hmm.
And there's our, so we know he's an immortal, which we haven't had an immortal for an episode or two, so kind of nice.
Yeah.
Then we get our opening, which I skipped again.
Yep.
Now we've got, we find out that Captain Magnus is police captain Carl Magnus's younger brother.
Yeah.
Because Carl and Nick are at the cop bar that we've seen a couple times now.
Yeah.
Carl is putting him back. He is mourning his little brother who died. His little brother was a Gulf War veteran. Hero, right? He had a like Silver Star or Congressional Medal of Honor, I think mm-hmm. is what it was. Carl's all upset about it, obviously. He's, you know, he had an ex-wife and kids. He was in a rough way. Donald, his little brother, was in a rough path. But it was still his brother. Nick wants to find out what happened. And they end up, then we cut to the guy. As they're investigating what happened, they go to the apartment, right? That's later.
Right.
But they do end up going to Donald's apartment, looking around. Nick notices the door was kicked in, all this kind of stuff. And he finds on the ground in the alley, underneath some stuff, because, you know, we don't move anything as police investigations, mm-hmm. Dog tags.
Yep.
And the dog tags are for someone named John Ray Fielding. So Nick is in full-on detective mode, even though not a cop.
And yeah.
He's going to find out about this. We cut to a cemetery, and our guy Fielding is standing in front of his own gravestone, having died in action in Kuwait. And then he looks at another of the gravestones right next to his, saying, We got him, whatever kind of thing. Like, you know, it was for all of us. Mm-hmm. And then we see Amanda, who just so happens to be in the same cemetery on the same day.
Yeah.
Which is a huge coincidence. But she's there in front of the gravestone of Nick's former partner.
Yeah.
Which was weird to me. I didn't understand what was going on here. Like, she didn't know this person at all. But here she is, like, apologizing, saying Nick's doing well, he's not a cop anymore, blah, blah, blah. And while she's there, then she feels the immortal, and Fielding notices her, and we get a flashback to World War I in France, mm-hmm. where we see Amanda fleece some poor youngster in the military out of his horse by offering him some apple brandy that was spiked. And knocking him unconscious. But then, as she's making off with the horse, she overhears a commanding officer of some type give a young John Ray Fielding a satchel, who, again, in the for the purposes of exposition, he has to see the jewels go into the satchel and then say out loud, "But sir, there's a bunch of jewels and gold in this satchel. Are you sure you want me to take it?" Loud enough so that anybody within earshot would hear him.
Right.
Which is great.
And Amanda was in earshot.
Yes, she was. So she ends up tracking him down. And, she goes on ahead and fakes mm-hmm. being injured. So he comes, tries to help her. And then she pulls a gun on him, takes the satchel, and rides off. Because... gold, jewels, that's all she wants. That's our flashback. Then Fielding is holding a grudge. We don't know exactly mm-hmm. why yet, but he's angry with Amanda. They have a little bit of a confrontation, but they're on holy ground, so they can't fight.
Yeah.
But he does end their conversation there with, "Next time we meet, you won't be on holy ground."
Mm-hmm.
So Amanda goes home. Of course, Lucy is worried. I did like the line, is that what we're doing now? When the going gets tough, the tough get passports. I like that. That was good. Because of course that's Lucy's go-to is we'll just get out of town.
Right.
When Nick shows up and he wants to know about this John Ray Fielding, because he found the dog tags in the alley, but, he looked up his service record and John Ray Fielding died in Desert Storm in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick knows this guy's an immortal. and he wants to know where to find him. Amanda says, I can't tell you where to find him, and I wouldn't tell you where to find him. She wants nothing to do with the guy.
Yeah.
So a lot of this episode is Nick trying to figure out why someone would hurt Donald, who Fielding is. Fielding, I do like him going to the cops to get Amanda.
Yeah, that was a smart play.
But the funny thing about it is he goes to the one precinct in the city that knows who Amanda is and like has the cops that know her pretty much by name, right? And can get it from just the...
Right.
What I'm going to choose to believe is that he went to multiples until he found the one that took the bait properly.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Because that just makes him smarter. But
right.
Yeah, so he goes in pretending that he was robbed by Amanda and then gets her in for a lineup, which I love how eager the detective is to get her in.
Yeah.
And then they do the lineup, and of course, Amanda and Fielding feel each other. And then he says, nope, it's not her. Because he just wanted to get her into the building so then he could confront her.
Right.
Which the detective is all sorts of upset about. But they have to leave, and then he confronts her outside the precinct. And as he is talking to her and saying, let's go, we're going to go have our fight right now, Nick walks out. And then they decide to pull guns at each other, Fielding and Nick, in the middle of the street in front of the police station. Because
right.
That's what you do. So everyone gets taken.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I loved Amanda's line about that. Oh, the boy's playing High Noon in front of the police station.
Yeah. And so everybody got hauled back inside. Mm-hmm. Captain Magnus is all up in Amanda and Nick and Lucy's business about everything. They've got Fielding in another room because he's the witness. Who's claiming that that Amanda is a problem and all this kind of stuff. And then when Magnus goes to find Fielding and bring him back in, oh, he's gone. He knocked the detective out and left.
Yep.
So Fielding's in the wind. Amanda is concerned. Nick is trying to figure out what goes on. Nick goes home, and as he's getting to his house, he runs into Captain Magnus again, who's very drunk.
Yeah.
And he basically tells him, look, I'll find out what I can, and when I find anything out, I'll let you know. Because the police aren't doing anything about his brother's death, because it's just ruled a accident. He fell.
Right.
No big deal. And he was in rough shape anyway, right? So it's plausible that he would fall. So Nick goes inside, and who's waiting for him inside? Fielding.
Yep.
They have themselves a conversation. Turns out the reason Fielding went after Donald Magnus is because in the Gulf, Magnus, while flying his A-10 Warthog, shot up a tank that Fielding and some men were in, and they burned to death inside the tank.
Mm-hmm.
And he's holding a grudge for that. So he's holding the grudge for that, and then Nick finds out why he wants Amanda, too, because he lets slip about Amanda, and he's like, well, she doesn't have anything to do with this. You know, she wasn't in the Gulf. And he goes, no. And then he tells, so when Amanda took that satchel of jewels and gold, there were orders inside the satchel for the men. The orders were for the men to evacuate, to get out of there. They never got those orders, so they stayed put. And then 120 soldiers in World War I got massacred.
Yep.
And that was John Ray Fielding's first death. So he's been holding this grudge against Amanda since then, but hasn't put in a lot of effort to find her, apparently, but has now. And so he wants her.
Yeah.
So Nick goes to Amanda and tells her about that. Now, Amanda is dealing with some guilt of her own over Nick's former partner, because that happened 7 episodes ago, and we're going to bring that up now.
Yeah.
But when he tells her about what happened in World War I and the orders and all of that, now it's just too much. Her guilt is taking her over. Because at first she kind of denies it. She's like, no, I wouldn't do any of that. No, I wouldn't. I just took the money. That's all. It was just money.
Because
she didn't think she hurt anybody. But, so she gets upset. And she's ready to go confront Fielding. Nick doesn't want her to. I think when he comes... Oh, so as Nick is leaving, this is great. Because again, of course, you know, wonderful coincidences. Fielding's showing up in the building because he found where Amanda's apartment is. And the elevator door opens up and there's Fielding and there's Nick. So he just headbutts him, knocks him out, handcuffs him, and takes him to Donald Magnus's grave. And while he's there, starts talking to him. And what is it? Fielding is still upset when Amanda shows up, and Amanda says, "No, look, we're on holy ground. We're just going to talk." So they go to talk, and Nick is like, "Whatever." He's not going to get involved, I guess. So Amanda and Fielding talk it out. She explains to him, "I didn't mean to hurt anybody." He's holding the grudge anyway. He's like, "Look, you need to honor their deaths. It's 120 men." Come to find out, it was his first death. And so he's upset about the fact that, you know, all of his friends died. He watched his wife remarry, mourn him, remarry, grow old. He couldn't do anything about it. He, you know, Amanda took everything from him, blah, blah, blah. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then he leaves. Amanda tells Nick, goes back to Nick and says, "Look, everything's fine, but I'm going to walk home." So he leaves her. And then he goes to the apartment later, and she's not there. And she left without her sword. He does get that information out of Lucy. Because at first she's trying, Lucy's trying to run defense, but it doesn't work so well. So Amanda has gone to Fielding and met with him, but without a sword. She is ready to lay down and let him take her head. She's feeling incredible amounts of guilt over what happened.
Yeah.
Fielding is... confused at first that she won't fight him, upset, but she says, "Look, I did that. I caused those deaths. I'm going to pay for that. So I'm not going to fight you. I'm not going to kill you for that. Here we go." So he stabs her with his sword. But before he can take her head, Nick shows up because apparently he knew where she was.
Yeah.
Which, okay. He shows up, draws a gun on Fielding. Fielding, of course, keeps calling Nick a man of honor. You know, you should understand all this. But Nick, this is where the episode, I think, did something really interesting, which is Nick tells Fielding, "Look, I understand. I get it. Guilt will make people do crazy things." And he talks to Fielding about feeling. Fielding has survivor's guilt. Fielding is upset because he lived when all those other men died. And he's continued living and carrying that guilt. And all he has done his entire life because of that is go from war to war. So he was in World War One. He was in Spain. He was in World War Two, Korea, Vietnam, the Gulf. He just, that's all he's known. He dove into that so hard. And now he's trying to exercise that guilt by placing everything onto Amanda, placing everything onto Don Magnus. And Nick convinces him that Amanda has, quote unquote, died for what she did and to let it go. And Magnus agrees and leaves. And so when Amanda wakes up, Nick is there and he basically says, "It's all over. Don't worry about it. He's not coming back." And that's where the episode ends. So... Decent enough episode. I have some thoughts on it, and I want to get your thoughts on it as well. But that's pretty much how the episode goes. So yeah, let's talk about what happened and what we thought about it.
Sure.
What do you mean,
None of those.
But you identified her from her picture.
I was wrong.
Well, then take another look. Number three, step forward.
Overall, I like this episode. What brought it around for me was that very bit at the end with the whole survivor's guilt and that angle. And because it's just not something we've heard enough about. We've had immortals carry grudges, right? They get upset about a wrong that happened to them. But I liked the idea that Fielding has spent his whole life angry and upset. But it's because he's suffering from survivor's guilt. He died, but came back, and all those other men didn't. And then he moved on You know, he had to watch his wife grow old. Like, all this stuff happened, and he goes on to another war, and the same thing happens to him there. My guess is he probably died in action in every one of those conflicts he was a part of.
Yeah, probably.
And just the idea of that is really intriguing to me. I wish what would have taken this from a good to a great episode would have been to focus more on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just not something... I honestly believe that if this were a series that wasn't made in the 90s and maybe, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 years newer, that they probably would have dove into that part of it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because it's really interesting to me to go in that direction with this that we just haven't seen before. I mean, what do you think of that?
No, absolutely. That is absolutely what did it for me this episode, that whole conversation at the end, and what didn't make it a great episode, I think, was Michael Rhodes acting as John Ray Fielding didn't feel like the character we got at the end.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little too much campiness at the beginning. And I was just like, okay, what are we doing? And then when we get to the end, it's like, oh, I get it now. Yeah, that's not how I would expect someone feeling that way, having been through so many wars and feeling so much survivor's guilt, to be acting at this point, especially considering how many immortals we've seen deal with crap.
Yeah.
And how they end up dealing with it themselves. The fact that we know, as, you know, just regular humans who have a regular lifetime, the way they get all messed up, like Donald Magnus was.
Yeah.
You know, just for his lifetime. So I kind of wish he had played it more as a not so campy. And I think that would have worked a lot better.
That would have helped, and it would have made a little bit more sense for him to have as quick or as abrupt a turn at the end as he had, because that's the other part of it. Because we didn't really get that aspect of things until that final scene. His change at that point just feels a little bit rushed. So I feel like spend less time with Captain Magnus. We don't need that connection, really, for Nick to get interested in this. Like, it could be there, but I know what they're trying to do, which is they're trying to give Nick more meat, and they're trying to make his story more interesting. But I feel like the better story here was what happened to Fielding. If they spent more time with that, and you're right, it was a little campy at the beginning.
And at this point, we've had enough interaction with Captain Magnus, you know, Nick's boss, that I don't feel like we need all that interaction. We need enough to show that Nick is there for him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that doesn't surprise me at all. I don't need a whole lot for that. And then Nick, you know, digging deeper and, you know, not being able to turn off detective mode, that's fine. But yeah, I don't think we needed as much between him and his former captain that much.
We don't. Like, we need at the beginning... What we needed was to start the episode with them in the bar, and you hear about what happened. Mm-hmm. And then Nick goes on his own to find out, because he cares enough about Carl to do that. And then, because we don't need Carl showing up outside his apartment to drunkenly tell him basically what we've already heard him say.
Right.
We could have skipped all that and then just had the next interaction be the second time they're at the bar, where Carl again is very drunk still because he's still mourning his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And now he finds out that his brother's Congressional Medal of Honor was for friendly fire. And he punches Nick out and all that. So, like, you could streamline that a little bit and then give us more John Ray Fielding and give us more of kind of what his struggle is, what he's been going through, to make him a more sympathetic villain. So that when he does decide to not do any more to Amanda and let things go, that it feels more within his character, because the camp factor and sort of the extreme grudge holding that he had throughout the first part of the episode just disappears when, if you have like, here's why he's doing that. So you have him in the beginning tracking down Donald, killing Donald. But then you have this whole middle part where we find out about his backstory and what happened. And then at the end, he decides, you know what? I will let this go. I have, there is nothing else I can do to gain more. She is contrite. She does feel guilt over what she did, because like Amanda in that last scene is great, where she talks about, I've never killed anybody, you know, kind of thing. But like, she's never been malicious about it, but she's been irresponsible and she's been selfish. And and that's the thing she's feeling, which I'm sure is what they were trying to get through in the whole she goes to Nick's partner's grave, is like this idea of, well, this person that I didn't know laid down her life for me, and she feels guilt over that. But we know that's had to have happened to her more than once.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of one of those things.
Yeah, and that whole thing with her at, you know, Hoffman's grave, I think it would have been better if they had played it more as, started out with Amanda first saying, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why this is making me feel this way.
Yes.
Like, have this guilt be something new to her. And then when she feels more guilt later because of the soldier thing, it's like, okay, now I'm feeling it more and more. Like, have that build. Like, just a little tweak would have made that better. And then have Nick, at the end, when he's talking to Fielding, say, hey, do you know why you saw Amanda in the graveyard? Let me tell you about that. You know?
See, you've already written a better episode than we saw. Which, and again, yep, we saw a pretty good episode. But
right,
you just improved it tenfold by two little tweaks there. So
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's tough, right? When you're writing, when you've got to write 22 to 24 episodes of a season, you've only got so much time to write them, and you're kind of stuck in some constraints. Like, it's easy for us to sit back and think about how we could make something that we're watching better, as opposed to just creating the thing in the first place.
Sure.
But this is these are the types of things that separate a show that lasts several seasons and has a good following from something that just isn't fully baked and doesn't quite make it. Like, they wanted to obviously you want to cash in on as much momentum as you can from Highlander the series,
right?
Because that's your inroad. But what we have found so far, 8 episodes in, is the weakest points of this are where they don't play in that sandbox enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Nick isn't a bad character. He's not. Paul Johansson's not fantastic, but I think some of that is just not in a whole lot of time, and then the chemistry issue that we've talked about before with Elizabeth Grayson. But they're focusing a lot on Nick and not enough on Amanda, and if Amanda is supposed to be the driving force of the show, these should be her stories with Nick tagging along.
Mm-hmm.
Nick should be more of a Richie and less of a Duncan.
Right.
And that's where it feels like maybe the producers were worried that Elizabeth Grayson could carry the series by herself, and they wanted to have, you know, more that it feels like, tell me it doesn't feel like a writer's room or a writing team full of guys making the show.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, when you just said it, they're writing Nick as if he's Duncan. I'm like, yeah, they are. And they don't know how to get him out of the way for Amanda's show.
Yeah. And even if you want it to be about both of them, it should be Amanda with Nick there. Because she is going to drive the story, and he is being brought into the world. But we're spending a lot of time in his world.
Yeah.
Which is the less interesting world. So, you know.
Yeah, and as we said, we're spending too much time in his world where it doesn't need to be spent that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just so many times we keep saying they are giving us more than we really need to sell this character and to sell his relationships. Like, we don't need all of that and done that way.
No, we definitely don't. And I do think that if Elizabeth Grayson wasn't going through the personal thing she was when the show was being made, and her and Paul Johansson were able to have the better chemistry, that's going to help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the biggest thing hurting the show, because what worked early on in Highlander, for those first couple of, you know, season and a half, what made it work was Adrian Paul and Alexander Vandernoot. You know, their chemistry was great. And then Stan Kirsch fit right into it. They were cohesive. And this feels like two people at odds, which I know they're going for the will they, won't they. Maybe there's a romance. What's going on there? But we'd already, by this point in the 90s, seen that done better. Like, you can have that opposites, but there has to be, you know, it's Mulder and Scully, right? That's what they're kind of going for here, is a Mulder and Scully with very different personalities. But the difference here is that David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson had a chemistry that worked. And these two just don't have that. So it's a lot, it's a bigger hill for them to climb.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And then, you know, to add on to that, like you said, the campiness, which it's not entirely the fault of the actor, right? He's only got so much time to develop and come up with his character. Because as we've talked about before, and I'm sure this series did it too, Highlander worked, and a lot of shows did this back in the 90s. There's some that still do it today, but they had that 111 production schedule going on where they were filming, they were writing an episode, filming an episode, and editing an episode all at the same time.
Sure.
And so, you know, you can only get, like, Michael Rhodes comes in, he's probably got, you know, a couple days maybe to go over the script, figure out what he's doing. They shoot for a week, and then he might have to do some ADR. So it's like, he's only got so much time to make up a character, and it's... So it's not his fault. With more time, he could make a better character, but, you know, some of that's the writing.
Sometimes you gotta lay that... Yeah, some of that's writing. Sometimes that's just the director. Like, the director not being on board and figuring out the character in time, you know?
Also, one thing I noticed in this episode, and boy, did I notice it in this episode, is the director of this one loved his Dutch tilts.
Everything Dutch tilts and loved to be as close as he possibly could to whatever's going on. Like when he ran over Rhodes at the beginning, I didn't know that was going on until we saw the shot of the body under the car.
Yeah.
At the back. Because the way they close up on that tire, I'm like, is something wrong with the car? Is that what they're trying to tell us? And it's like, oh, he ran over somebody. That's what they're... Yeah, that was the worst possible way I've ever seen anybody run over a body in a TV show ever. Like, usually you show it from the driver's side and you show that, you know, car going up and down. You don't just static on the tire kind of
thing. Something. Like, I get that you got to save some budget here and there and it's tough to do a stunt like that, but, like, we've seen decent stunts in Highlander. And we've seen decent effects. And there's a way to do that. There's a way to shoot it that actually tells you what's going on. Like, you're
and
right.
Like Nick and his captain at the bar, they were so close up all the time. The final confrontation between Fielding and Amanda, it's like you barely get the sense that either one's doing anything other than standing right there face to face talking to each other.
And even a shot like Amanda at, is it Hoffman? I can never remember. Yeah, Hoffman. At Hoffman's grave. There's the shot of Amanda and she's talking, so it's close up on her. Get that? That makes sense.
Sure.
But then we switch to a medium shot behind Amanda as he's like as she's setting down like some flowers or something, and then backing away, and we see the name, and it's tilted like 35 degrees.
Yeah.
For no reason, we don't need a tilt there. A Dutch tilt should be done in a way to make you feel uneasy and uncoordinated and weird. You don't need it on that shot. That's just kind of dumb. So, yeah, there's a little bit there, too. And, you know, maybe it's just a young... I have no idea who the director was. George Mendeluk. So I don't know if he'd been around for a while or he was young and trying something new. Who knows? But there were some things that could have been done a little bit better. Well, he was born in 1948, so he wasn't exactly young at the time of making this.
Actually did a lot on this show.
So, you know, I've seen a good number of Dutch tilts, so maybe that was just his thing.
Maybe.
Was to do those. But either way, I mean, it's still a decent episode. It's far from the worst thing I've seen this season.
And I always appreciate a good episode that involves immortals without taking a head, and there's a good reason for it.
Yes.
And just despite what we've said about Fielding's character throughout the episode, that ending really was well done.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That's what saved the episode for me. It went from being a meh to, eh, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So that is episode 8, The Unknown Soldier, which is a great title.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 9 is our next episode, and that is Cloak and Dagger. And here's the rundown of this one. This one's IMDb rating is about the same, which is a good metric to go by. That's usually, when I look at something like the IMDb rating of a series, especially a lesser seen series, I don't necessarily go for like, oh, this is an 8 or this is a 7. I want to see the consistency throughout the series. So if everything's kind of hovering around a 7, then I can kind of, and a couple of them go up and maybe some of them are slightly below that, then you know, okay, we're going to be relatively the same ballpark. This is roughly the same rating. And this episode is Bert Myers hires Amanda to help him break into the house of an industrialist under the guise of stealing files to help Nick. But in reality, the files that Myers wants to steal contain information regarding his former life as a spy. When the industrialist winds up dead, Amanda and Nick decide to find out exactly what Myers is up to. Ooh. Intrigue, spies. And Myers, by the way, is Nick's boss at the private security company.
Oh, okay.
Who we've seen before and has some interesting backstory. So,
Yeah.
Should be interesting. So that is going to be our episode next week. Now, we do record the show live Thursday nights, 9 p.m., twitch.tv/TVsTravis. If you want to hang out with us and hear us talk about it live. Show comes out as a podcast every week. We are going to be taking the next couple of weeks off. It is right around the holidays here in the U.S. And with family stuff and other things going on, we're going to be taking a couple of weeks off. So we will be back after the first of the year to continue going through Highlander the Raven.
Mm-hmm.
But between now and then, obviously you'll have this episode to listen to. And if you want to chat with us, I am on all the social medias. Whether it's Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, Threads, I'm on Twitch often. It's all of it is TV's Travis. TVS Travis, you can find me in anywhere. I stream this show. I stream my other podcasts, What You Haven't Seen. I sometimes play games or do some hobby work. And I love to talk pop culture, comics, movies, TV, Highlander, anything Highlander. Give me your takes on stuff. Mm-hmm. I had somebody actually earlier this week, I think it was, get in touch with me. I want to say it was via Facebook, and they said that they had watched the first episode of Highlander the Raven, and their hope was that it got better because it was barely a script, and which I thought was pretty funny.
So it
does get a little bit better, but you know, I love to hear from people, and you are also on a bunch of the social medias, including Instagram, as what is yours again?
It's The Audie Norman.
Excellent. And so absolutely.
You can find me there. And
the Instagram is a great one for that, because all your artwork's up there. Plus, Audie does commissions, man. It's always good. But yeah, that is episode 8, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks to do another episode.
Mm-hmm.
So until then, in episode 9, Cloak and Dagger, just remember, don't leave your dog tags in the alley.
No, not good.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.